You know, I really never have liked Goose's Dave. Talk to me aside, forget, live or die. I will never live a lie. I'm gonna get because I try. What? I won't quit until I die. What? I'm gonna make it wrong or right. Yeah. Make it through the darkest night. Yeah. When the morning comes, you'll see all I have is God in me. Give me a sign. No weapon formed against me shall prosper. And we're back after a couple weeks off. Dylan and Bedlam, the official Lookout Landing podcast. We are super excited today. We have a special guest in addition to my two normal co-broadcasters, Scott Weber and David Skiba. We are joined by 710 ESPN Mariner beat writer and all-around reporter Shannon Dreher. Shannon, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, happy to be here.
Quite the first series, yeah? Did you guys have fun down in Texas?
Oh, man. You know, I don't think that could have gone any better. We had a lot of fun down there. Just, you know, the first night, I think we were all just bracing ourselves for, well, that's not C to Z and same old Mariners and all of that. And oh, poor Felix and this, that, and the other. And, you know, I think it might have kind of gotten everybody's attention a little bit in that clubhouse a little bit. And then to see them come out the next night and, well, there's Scott Servais. Okay, he still fights. That's great. And then the next night, just absolutely, you know, a ridiculously silly ninth inning in which we saw everything that we didn't see the previous year. It was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it was really, really, I mean, from the fan perspective, it's everything that DePoto and Servais have gotten us excited about. You know, like, this is what we've spent all winter kind of hearing them talk about. You're talking about C the Z. Are you seeing at you're in the clubhouse there, is this something that the players are kind of talking about? I know the coaches talk about it to them, but have you kind of heard them kind of talking about C the Z or control the zone? Like, maybe not in those terms, but is that kind of mindset, that philosophy seem to be getting soaked in by the players?
Not at all. You'd like to think that. You'd like to think there's a big poster on the wall and all the numbers are there and they're having their little meetings talking about relearning how to get an approach and hit. But at the big league level, no. I think that the C the Z was much more of an organizational philosophy, and there was a philosophy that they had before. I wrote about that last year, but I think that they were able to much better define it and put it into terms and better parameters, and it was not a suggestion. This is the way it's going to go. And I think that it's something that you're going to see it more present visually and be able to hear it more in the minor leagues than you are in the major leagues. What they did at the major league level is, you know, they basically cleared house of everybody that wasn't a C the Z type player, sure, and brought in players that were. And with the big leaguers, it's more of a suggestion. And it's more that the coaches will put it into conversation. And kind of the neatest thing, or I guess there were many neat things, but one of the earliest neatest things that I saw when I was in spring training this year was I asked Scott Servais one morning, how are you going to introduce this? Because obviously you're not going to sit him down with the overhead projector or whatever and tell the big leaguers this is what happens here, here, and here. And he said that they plan to introduce it in small groups and down on the field. And one of the things that I saw, and it was before the games began, shortly after pitchers and catchers reported, he had the big boy batting group, and I think it was Robinson Cano, Kyle Seager, I believe Adam Lind was in it, and Nelson Cruz. And this was after all of the regular drills had been run. They had a special, you guys have got extra hitting after workouts. And he took them all down, and he had them in front of home plate standing on one of the backfields, and it was all set up so that they would hit. And it wasn't just Scott Servais, but Tim Bogar was there, Edgar Martinez was there, Scott Brosius was there, I'm sure, and a couple of other coaches that I'm not thinking of were there. And they had about a 25-minute discussion, and that's how he introduced it. And it wasn't, you're going to do this, this, and this. It was a discussion. And you saw every player giving input, and you saw back and forth. Then they trotted out, and they hit for about 25 minutes, and they actually had base runners when they did that, they were doing base running drills, and they kind of incorporated that into the situational hitting. Then they came back and they had another conversation. So, you know, that's kind of how it was introduced. And I think that it is, I'm sure there are things that they talk about in the scouting reports. And of course, they've all got that on their iPads and they can get whatever they want right now in the advanced meetings. I'm sure Edgar talks about that, and that's another one of the things that they're doing that's really interesting. And in the hitters meeting, ever since Edgar came over, when Edgar came over, rather than just having the one hitting meeting before each series, Edgar wanted to have daily hitting meetings. And they're really quick, but it's just they all go over all of the hitters. And when Service got here, a couple of veterans went to Service, and they said, we want to continue the daily hitting meetings. So I think that probably there's a little nugget here and a little nugget there. And, you know, they obviously are tracking everything. It'll be interesting to see if they see something that they think they can help, how they introduce that. But no, it's not something that you actively hear about. These are, you know, professionals that are in there, and I think they're, you know, perhaps made aware of a couple of things here and there as far as numbers and what they are in this situation and that situation, but it's not really too far off of where I think a lot of these guys were.
Interesting. Yeah. So you kind of touched on it a bit, Shannon, but I was going to ask, you talked about the daily hitting meetings, but what other changes have you noticed since Edgar came back into the fold, if any?
Wow. You know, as far as the work goes, one of the things, and I think that this is one of Edgar's strengths, and I mean, he's a hitting savant. I mean, there's no two ways about it. And he's one of those rare ones. He's not just the guy that could do it, but he can teach it too. And he can see it for others. He doesn't just see himself. I mean, he can help a leadoff hitter as much as he can help a Nelson Cruz or a Robinson Cano. He can help a rookie as much as he can help anyone else. And I think that one of his biggest strengths that he has, and this is in talking to the guys, is Edgar can actually put himself into any stance and any swing and does. I mean, he will, Kyle Seager, here's your swing. And he gets into it so he can see what Kyle Seager can see or what Ketel Marte can see, and then in turn teach. And it was funny because some of them were like, yeah, sometimes we don't need anything, we just like to see him do it, or we like to see him take his swings. I mean, they geek out about that stuff too.
Sure.
But I think that that's something that's been pretty unique with him. I also see a lot more, and in talking to people like Mike Blowers and Jay Buhner, who played with Edgar would, you know, when you were Edgar's teammate, you could go up to him on the bench and say, hey, what's this guy got? What's he going to do? And Edgar said, well, he's got this and this and this. He did this, this, and this to me. He's not going to do that to you. He's going to do this, this, and this. Well, I see a lot more guys just check in with Edgar before at bats.
Sure.
Like every at bat.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that as much with any other hitting coach. So yeah. I think that he's just a lot more active. And the trust that's there, and okay, Edgar says this, let's go do this.
Let's talk about the worst number three hitter that Andy Van Slyke had ever seen. I mean, I think we kind of saw this coming with Cano. You could see it in spring training, the way that the way he was moving, for one thing, the way he was talking, his fitness level, the way he was spraying the ball. But you and us to a lesser extent have learned over time not to really take too much stock in spring training stats, but my goodness, watching Robinson Cano right now, not only we kind of get the vibe that he kind of runs the clubhouse, or at least is one of those head guys that everybody's kind of circling around, and you see the way he's with Marte, but he just seems like he is the hub of this roster right now. Like everybody else is kind of swirling around him, and he's the sun that everybody else orbits around. Is that a fair way to put it?
Well, you know what? I think you've got a group of veterans that does. And in the clubhouse, you know, there's a very Latin corner, and, uh-huh. and that's mm-hmm. one of the neatest things to see. And I've got so much stuff that I have not had time to put stuff out.
You can talk about it here.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask a question about the Latin corner, but...
Well, we're in it right now.
Yeah.
but one of the neatest things that... we'll see, and where I was going with the stuff that I have is you heard the whole thing in Chicago where LaRoche and the kid whatnot didn't really talk to players about that, but Robinson inadvertently brought it up with me. I sat him down at 7:10. We have this series of interviews and promos, and they're called Who I Am and Who We Are. And we sit down and we talk with just, you know, any number of athletes, every athlete, soccer players, you know, Seahawks, sure, Mariners, yeah, college, high school, coaches, this, that, and the other. And I sat Robinson Cano down for one of those interviews, and you're really getting more into the person than you are into what they do on the field and this, that, and the other. And it was really interesting because it was just a great, you have to get them out of the clubhouse to do it. It has to be high quality audio. So you've got them one-on-one and you've got their focus and you can ask them anything and you're really getting into it. But I asked what it was like to have his father in there, because Felix has all sorts of relatives that are always in there. This year, you might have read Gutierrez's father was down there for 2 weeks, uh-huh. and you walk in, and they're sitting in a seat next to Gutierrez's locker is Senior Gutierrez. And, I mean, they're just like anybody else's dad. You know, they love baseball, and they love their son. They're thrilled that they're doing what they're doing. And then Cano's dad has been there quite a bit. And Nelson Cruz's dad was down in Texas. He's not very big. That was kind of surprising. But I asked Robinson, you know, what's it like to look around and, you know, see everybody's dad or relatives there? And he said, you know what? Our clubhouse is our home. Mm-hmm. And yep. he said, I don't care if anybody brings anyone in. As long as we're getting the work in and nobody is being disruptive, this is our home. We spend more hours here than anywhere else. Yeah, and I found that interesting because you do see a good amount of relatives and kids and whatnot. So in that Latin corner, what really kind of struck me, it was just kind of a beautiful sight because I don't know if you remember, there years and years ago, and I have never seen baseball in Latin America, and I would really like to. Yeah, that's like one of my passions. I'd love to go to the DR. I'd love to go to Cuba yeah. and see it. But I remember there was an article in one of the Seattle papers, and somebody went and saw Edgar in the off season. In Puerto Rico, and at Edgar's house in Puerto Rico, or the family home in Puerto Rico, people would just show up on the front porch at about 5 o'clock to sit and talk baseball.
Oh, that's so cool.
And that's kind of what it reminded me to see, you know, all of these guys and their fathers in that corner. But as far as the leadership goes, you know, definitely he's a force. Cruz is a force. Kyle Seager is a force, a quiet force at that. There's a lot of leadership coming from a lot of different directions. And, you know, Robbie is healthy. He's happy, and he couldn't have been happy last year with so much that went on.
Sure.
He's a lot bigger than he was. That's yeah. really started to strike me in the last 2 weeks. And, I mean, he's very committed to the work that he did in the off season and continued it after the workouts, even in spring training, his own personal workouts. So this is a guy that's on a mission. He's got a lot to prove, and I think the Van Slyke thing, if anything else, perhaps maybe gave him that extra push. I don't sure. know if he needed it, but if he didn't, he got it. And, you know, I think it was a slap in the face that he didn't make the All-Star game last year. I think he took that personally, and he wants to be big. He wants to be one of the best. He's got those aspirations, and I think he set himself up nicely for a good season.
Well, I don't know if you probably didn't see it, but David has been on board and campaigning for Robinson Cano to be the MVP this year for over a month now. So Cano is just making David and the rest of us
proving
really,
me
really
true.
Happy.
Yeah,
it's
you know, if it happens, if he really keeps this going, I want to see signs that like, and this didn't come from me because of course I didn't say this.
Of course not.
I want to see signs at Safeco Field that just say thanks, Andy.
Well, yeah, but we'll make the sign. It'll be great.
David, your prediction of Cano for MVP is definitely a good thing to hitch your wagon to. It's a lot better than Brad Miller, future superstar.
Yeah, good job on that, Scott.
Or Brad Miller MVP.
Oh. Oh man, those guys are off to a rough start down in Tampa. Scott, did you have anything that you were thinking that you want to ask?
Yeah, I was just curious talking about the clubhouse. There's so many new faces in the clubhouse this year, and I was just curious if you could share any insight as to maybe some of the friendships that have materialized between some of the new people, or maybe some new faces becoming friends with old faces, and just, you know, kind of the dynamic as things change in a fresh new year with you know, renewed expectations and all that stuff.
You want the People Magazine stuff, then?
I do.
You're going to the gal for the People Magazine
stuff. David
and
Star love
Star,
the Bachelor.
Right. Star, they want the Bachelor. Weekly? All right.
Yep. Let's just gab.
Yeah, we're gabbing. Friendships. One of new guys who's just kind of in the middle of everything and are really kind of neat. I don't want to say unassuming, not too loud, not too boisterous, but Wade Miley is kind of definitely...
Oh, gosh. That dude.
Why are you laughing?
We love him.
He just looks like such a dude.
He just confirms what we kind of thought
he's
already.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he seems
I hate beards. They're all bad, but I like Wade Miley. I mean, he's just, I mean, that's he can even overcome that terrible beard. But you know, one of the neat things, you come in the first day I'm there, and he's like grabbing Anthony, Sashi Kuma's interpreter. So I want to talk to Kuma. He pulls up a chair for Anthony, sits down next to Kuma, and starts asking him, where'd you grow up? And, you know, what do you like doing in your off time? And what do you think about this, that, and the other? I just, one of the earliest days in spring training. He and Felix are good buds right now, which is one of the most unlikely.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy, and he's great to talk to. And I had a great story that I discovered and then just really, again, didn't have a lot of time to do anything with it. But Clevenger and Miley played on the same scout team and all-star team when they were 15 years old.
Wow.
And Miley's he's funny in that, and to make it even better, Justin Upton and Nick Adenhart were on the same team.
Well, they were
it
probably
was,
pretty good.
Yeah, they were probably pretty good. But
they probably did okay, yeah.
You know, Miley is, he is kind of that kind of, he's kind of the dude too, on top of everything else. And it just, he was telling me the story and he's like, yeah, it was a Virginia All-Star team and Clevenger was on it. And I'm like, what, were you the Louisiana Ringer? How does this happen? You guys are 15, this, that, and the other. And he's like, well, it is pretty close to Maryland. So that's why Clevenger was there. And so I go to Clevenger because you always go to the catcher for the straight scoop. I mean,
sure.
That's the guy, that and the pitching coach, or you've got to have your catchers and your pitching coach. If you don't, you're totally screwed. But I go to Clevenger and he just starts laughing. He said, Virginia All-Stars? And yeah, he goes, no, it was Pennsylvania. But he was in the vicinity. He didn't remember that he played in Pennsylvania as a 15-year-old. And Clevenger was a shortstop at the time, because the Cubs converted him to catcher.
Sure.
And he was playing behind Upton. And Miley told me that his dad, Miley's dad, actually told him after a tournament, why isn't that Clevenger kid in at shortstop? He's got the better arm at 15. And then they both went to Southeastern Louisiana State, not at the same time either. So those two have been following each other around for a while. Yeah.
That's really
so
cool.
Serious history right there.
Shannon, was it you who tweeted out that Miley was threatening to dye the beard blonde?
Yes. Yes. Oh, Felix is trying to get everybody on board with this. And I'm doing everything I can to cancel it out. And just, you know, I have to go to the wives and tell them not to do this. I will find them. But this is just an absolute affront to everything what Felix has done.
Oh,
it's just terrible.
Thank you.
It is absolutely terrible.
I think the hair's okay, but I don't like the beard.
Yeah, David, you're too.
Yeah, we've discussed this before. Beard's no good.
But Shannon, you're like anti-beard in general. Is that accurate?
Yeah, pretty much.
Can I ask why?
I don't know. I haven't seen, you know, I haven't seen a lot of good ones. I think the beards that we are now seeing in baseball are so ridiculous, or just, you know, maybe I'm permanently scarred by Dustin Ackley.
Yeah.
What was growing in there? Really, what was growing in there?
I don't want to know. You just had to just keep your distance. And I mean, it's just, it's horrible. He was such a nice young man when he first came to the Mariners, but.
So when Nick Vincent trotted over from the Padres camp, you weren't pleased?
No, but I mean, at least, I mean, his very well manicured. I mean, he takes good care of the beard. I suspect there might be a little bit of dye in the beard. It's just too old. But yeah, there could be. But there's also some great, I don't, and just the fact that I even have to think about this or talk about this makes me hate them even more. And I think that's probably, I think that's where it just goes back to that. Guys are paying far too much attention to their facial hair. And to me, that I think that's probably why I hate it so much.
The intentional hobo look has definitely gone a little bit too far. And that goes back to the Red Sox.
So is there sort of
blame
a...
the Red Sox.
Is there sort of a, like, be yourself sort of, you know, we're getting this Jerry DePoto very, you know, SoCal vibe. Is there sort of a be yourself, you know, individual, you know, excellent sort of vibe right now in the clubhouse that's pervasive? Because we seem to be seeing it with Jerry.
Well, and Jerry's from New Jersey, so that's all kind of mixed up right there.
Sure.
But, yeah, and then I think it's really coming from Scott Servais, who's from Wisconsin. And, you know, Wisconsin, it's the most awesome state on the planet. So I think that maybe if they get the entire beer, cheese, sports, come on. If
and
they
beards,
get that vibe
and
going,
a lot of beards though.
It's true.
Well, it's colder there. If they you know, there's no excuse in some places. If they get that going, then they'll be fine. No, you know, there definitely is that, and it's service. And I think that this could turn out to be probably the biggest story of the year as far as the Mariners go. Look at me. I never say the biggest anything, so you might take that out too, especially if it doesn't happen.
I totally know how to edit. I've done it many times.
And I can Skype now.
It's a huge night.
Guys, we're learning so much.
Wonders never cease. Awesome.
Now, the service thing that is just really, really settling in is, and you know, I read just so many comments and so many tweets and everybody just freaking out, oh my God, he's never managed before. And well, maybe I was there too a little bit, but you know, it just nothing. No manager. He's going straight from the front office and player development. But I think that what we're seeing from him is he is using so much of his player development skills. And when you think about just everything that they have to deal with and all the different hats that they have to wear and the different ways and different types of players that they have to work with and motivate them, I think that everything that he's doing right now, he's been developing for some time. And he did admit that, you know, when we were in Texas, he was farm director there, and that was kind of a testing ground for a lot of things. But I think that with him, and he many, many times, the first time I heard, you know, just be who you are, is when I talked to Mike Zunino at the beginning of spring training. And he said that, you know, when Scott came and talked to him and said, we're going to do this and this, and we understand what happened, we just want you to be who you are. Mike said that was just an absolute load of bricks off of his back when he heard that. That just physically, I mean, just a sigh of relief. He felt different after hearing that. And I think that's where it starts. And it's funny, it's to watch this year, and not just with the Mariners, but see a couple of the other things that have happened and some of the national conversations that have gone on. Sure. I think Manny Acta really summed it up best. We had him on a Cactus League report, and he said, we've tailored this whole thing to the modern player. And just, I've never heard it really, you know, even addressed, but as old school as baseball is, and, you know, I like to think that I'm very old school, there comes a point in time when you have to adapt. And I remember, I want to say it was about 10 years ago, cell phones weren't allowed in the clubhouse. And no, they're never going to be allowed. And they're never, when you try and fight it and you try and fight it, and, well, they're in the clubhouse, you've got to use it, you know, and video games and this, that, and the other. And you've got to go with it. It's a different age, and people learn differently right now, and it's just, you know, part of the baseball evolution, and it's something that needs to be embraced, and they've embraced that. And so part of that is, you know, they are, you've got to be who you are, you've got to be free to be who you are, and you've also, you know, got to feel comfortable in your environment. And to that end, they've had those morning meetings where, you know, everybody's going to know everybody, and it seemed like forced chemistry when we heard about it before, but you got the veterans on, and they bought into it, and the next thing you know, it's the greatest thing ever. So to me, I think that a lot of what's going on right now is much more of what you might have seen at a minor league level, in just kind of how Scott is doing some things, and disguised as definitely big league, and we're doing this way. And if it all works out, and I said this when Jerry was hired, and he started making moves, and he started talking about his philosophy, I kind of felt that if this thing flies, it could be the next model. Or it could absolutely crash. I didn't think there was going to be a lot of between with it. And I think the same might go for Scott Service. And so the next time a manager is hired from the front office, or maybe you're starting to look more at player development guys, you know, that really have their hands on a lot of players at a lot of different levels and teach, you know, maybe this is going to be something that becomes a little bit more common. Maybe it is a very smart way to go.
Shannon, I got a question for you. Just kind of going off of that, one thing that I think has been really interesting is some of the decisions they've made as they've had let the minor league roster shake out, sending DJ Peterson back to Double A, keeping Alex Jackson in extended spring training. Have you kind of gotten a sense of how people feel about this whole, you know, you've got to earn your promotions thing? Because it's a big shift as to what we saw a lot of the Zarenczyk regime kind of handle things by moving guys up very, very quickly if they had the pedigree and not necessarily the performance. Just wondering what you've seen or heard any impressions on that.
Well, I think it's very tough for a couple of players, and it's very good for 98% of the rest of the players.
Sure.
And I think that, and that's something that I think a lot of the good GMs are very aware of, that any move is noticed by everybody in that system.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why DJ Peterson was moved to AAA last year. And I did, you know, there were some eye rolls and whatnot because of that.
Totally.
You
know,
I imagine from players too, I'm sure.
Yes. And that's a tough one. If you're the guy, you know, I'm trying to think of somebody who's had to battle a little bit more, but, you know, let's say you were Kyle Seager and Dustin Ackley was moved up without doing anything and having a disastrous year back when they were coming up, that kind of thing. So, I don't think they did anybody any favors with that. So I think that it's the right way to go, and it benefits the most. And the others are going to have to jump on board. Otherwise, they're going to be in another organization. And I'm not saying that DJ or Alex
were of course.
In any way, shape, or form.
No, absolutely not. You guys have any last questions for Shannon before we quit taking up her time? Let her enjoy the rest of her night off.
I just want to know if you know exactly what Chris Iannetta said to Tom Wilson. And if it can be shared. Remember, we know how to edit.
Yes.
Nathan knows how to edit. You guys had the advantage. I was up in a sealed press box with the sound being piped in from the Texas side. You guys had the field mic, which I heard
we all heard what Jeff Bannister said.
We all heard that, yeah. Well, Shannon, I'll ask you, and I'm not asking you to put any words, but just your gut instinct. We saw Tom here for years, and we were all kind of we weren't too confident that was an intentional pitch. You've known Tom for a while. Is that the kind of thing that you've seen him do before?
If it was intentional, which I think it probably was, I think it came from the pitching coach who had just gone out beforehand.
He didn't look convinced.
Yeah, he didn't really sell it after he threw
it. He didn't throw it with conviction.
Well, he didn't come storming off the mound, you know, when Iannetta was yelling at him. He kind of just, you know, lowered his shoulders, and it just didn't seem like he had the fire in him there after it was all over.
No, what's really interesting is, I mean, that's their pitching philosophy there. You know, they're going to own their real estate in Texas, and I'm going to guess that was the stern talk that
Brocale had with him.
And you know, you look at Brocale, and he would have hit him in a heartbeat.
Sure.
He
was, we just never seen Tom do that before. It was just really interesting because we've seen him.
Tom is a great guy. I don't think he would want to hurt anybody, you know, that obviously was a tough spot for him.
David, you got any last questions?
No, I think I'm good. This has been it's been so nice to hear, you know, how positive the clubhouse seems to be going, and especially after, I mean, how could it not after the last three games?
We're really, really thankful for your time, Shannon. Thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. And my favorite Sarah McLachlan song is Adia.
I'm so glad you were ready for that, Shannon. We would love to have you back on sometime. We're super, super grateful for all the work you do and all the information you bring us.
No problem. It's great to talk to you guys.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you again to Shannon Dreher for joining us. You guys, the baseball season is here. It is three games old. How are we feeling?
I wish there was baseball today.
Yeah, what the hell, man? Off day on the fourth day of the year?
It's the best part about getting to baseball season is that there's baseball every day. You can't take it away within the first week. It's not fair.
Do the Rangers?
I think a couple years ago, they had like a two-game series, right? And then there was a day off. That was even worse.
That was even last year. That was last year.
Yeah, that was Oakland, right? Yeah, two games.
It was
and then
LA, but same idea.
Did the Rangers have an off day today? I forgot to check. They need an off
they
day.
They are playing the Angels tonight, I believe.
Oh, so they kind of have an off day.
One of them does.
Yeah, check yourself, LA. Nice first series there. Guys, fun series, right? Good stuff. We're feeling
very
good.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time the Mariners had an opening series. I remember they've won because, you know, they'd won the nine straight opening days, but then they usually kind of just crap the bed after that. So I don't remember a series that was this much fun to open the year.
I mean, that opening game sucked, but after that, it's been all roses.
That opening game felt so fluky, too. I mean,
yeah, it was just weird. I think Jeff said it best, right? Welcome back, baseball, and fuck you.
Jeff, I'm sorry, who?
Jeff Sullivan. That's what he tweeted out. He said, welcome back, baseball, and fuck you.
I'll have to follow that guy. Hold on. No, that's perfect. That's absolutely correct. And Felix gives up one hit in six innings. And errors, I mean, the Ketel Marte error is whatever. We don't know how we feel about that guy's defense yet. But for Kyle Seager to make an error in the first game of the year, you're not planning on that at all. Felix's velocity was down. How are you guys tripping about that? Are you guys freaking out, or how are we feeling about that?
I didn't think it was down enough to freak out.
You know, Brendan Golowski, who will come on later, pointed out, you know, because Felix gets that late start to spring. Right now, Felix is theoretically in the dead arm period that a lot of pitchers face when they open spring with starts. And You know, the stuff had so much movement, and it was just his off-speed stuff was so nasty.
Sure.
And I don't really honestly care if it's, you know, hitting the right spot or not, because I don't think anyone knows what the spot is. So, you know, I'm not worried one hit in the opener. You know, he has a really fluky bad inning. They lose by one run. It's I think the worry is being overblown for now. I mean, let's talk again in five starts.
Yeah, and just like our excitement is overblown, you know, it's the first series. But, man, it just felt so good to see, you know, I think we're still kind of feeling like the Mariners as a good offensive team is such a strange foreign concept. But whether it was Edgar coming on last summer, and we should probably talk about that more, or just Cano rebounding and guys kind of falling into place, the offense was pretty good for the second half of last year. And then, you know, they shed some of their lineup ballast, their worst players, and replaced them with guys that they're hoping are going to be league average. And the lineup for the first, even against Hamels, when they only scored two runs, you know, this looks like a lineup that's going to try to grind out at bats, make guys work to get outs. And if there's one takeaway for that, obviously Cano is the big story, but just 1 through 9, watching that lineup grind through guys, especially against right-handed pitchers, it's going to be a tough lineup. You guys agree with that?
Oh, yeah. That lineup they tossed out there in the third game was just like, it was eight. I mean, if you include the switch hitters, it was 8 lefties, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And then sure. Cruz. I think it was 8 switch hitters or lefties and then Cruz.
Yeah, and pretty, I mean, you've got your varying levels of quality there, but included there are Robinson Cano and Kyle Seager and Seth Smith and Adam Lind, who is notoriously crushed right-handed pitching. So
I love watching that guy hit.
Who's that?
I love Adam watching Seth Smith.
Oh yeah,
in fact, Adam Lind against lefties was one of the most painful experiences. And if that's my one too early takeaway, it's we cannot let this guy play against lefties.
No,
ever.
No, he did not look good. But I totally agree with
Seth Smith.
Seth
Smith is on fire.
That guy's power is so underrated. That home run he hit was just crushed.
Oh, man.
He's got such a simple swing. I mean, what David, was it you that... No, you call him the professional. I think...
Yeah, he's the professional.
To me, he's dad. He is the quintessential dad.
No, that's Chris Young.
Well, we don't have Chris Young anymore.
But he's still the archetype.
Chris Young is Mr. Rogers playing baseball. Yeah, but Seth Smith has just looked fantastic, and he's building off a strong spring. As much as we've talked about Cano, we should talk about Cano, but Seth Smith looked great. You know who else looked freaking awesome? I had forgotten what it was like to have a catcher come up there and grind out at bats and get on base. But Chris Iannetta has just it's so early. So all of our excitement, listener, if you're listening, we know that there's only been 3 games. Okay,
do we?
I do. I know that there's only been 3 games. So before you come at us with small sample size, we get it. We're just letting ourselves have fun, okay? But watching
this
series was so great.
After all the times we watched Mike Zunino get up there and just, you know, pitchers go right after him with strikes and it's 0-2 immediately. Mm-hmm. Just how many times do we see that through the second half of last year? He gets up there and it's just, nope, that's it. It's over. At-bat's over before it even began.
Yep. Iannetta is bigger than I realized as well. I don't know. I don't know why I never really noticed that when he was with the Angels. We saw him so much, but he's a big guy, man.
He is a big dude.
Yeah, and you saw that. You know, he seems so stoic, and he's got like the quintessential. I don't know if you guys follow him on Twitter. He's got like the quintessential pro athlete Twitter, where his avatar is like him, like trying to look very stoic in his picture, and his tweets are basically like, here's my business that I do on the side. You should consider it, or I got a free giveaway. So he seems so bland, but the fire he showed when Tom Wilhelmsen drilled him, like, that really caught me off guard.
Yeah. No, that was a moment. And I think, you know, like you've said, and like we'll probably need to repeat a few more times, 3 games in. But you do wonder if, you know, late September or early October, we're talking about, remember when Chris Iannetta was pegged in Texas?
Yeah.
And Scott Servais came out of the dugout.
Yep.
Like, that was such a moment.
It was.
What was so great about this weekend. It was full of moments.
Yeah.
It was full of a really weird opening game that we're not going to forget because, you know, losing by giving up one run on opening day or one hit on opening day, that's something you're going to remember forever. You're going to remember the explosion and meltdown from 2 and then that 9th inning rally. Like, already, I feel like those 2 games would rank in the top 5 most memorable games of 2015.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, this season is already better than 2015.
I think you said something like that before. I might have stolen that inadvertently from you, David.
It's okay.
But
people steal stuff from me all the time, and it's just part of my life.
It's all a circle. You're fine.
All right, well, if it's accepted, then I'll keep doing it. Hey, guys, did you hear when I said Cano was going to be MVP last week?
David, how are we feeling riding the Robinson, captaining the Robinson Cano bandwagon?
So... you know, the Captain Cano bandwagon has been, it's been a great journey so far. The seas are smooth, and the wind is behind our sails. You know, the 4 home runs in 3 games is outrageous, but really, and of course, you know, I don't even need to say it, but obviously he's not keeping up the pace, but the swing is stupid right now.
Yeah.
He looked absolutely stupid.
And, you know, we just heard from Shannon too, that, that he's actually looking bigger than she remembered seeing him when he was in, the last 2 years. And I don't know how that compares to him in New York out, but, you know, generally speaking, we, tend to get a little bit larger naturally in our 30s. So if he's been able to turn that into muscle, you know, we can see
it's impressive.
I mean, this is a guy that's won a home run derby. The raw power is there, you know?
Oh yeah. And the
exit velocity has been nuts.
Oh, yeah.
The swing is just so sleek. It's so good.
It's the best. It's the most aesthetically pleasing swing for my money of any Mariners since Griffey. It's just a thing of beauty, and watching.
Maybe Sean Figgins.
Maybe. Oof. It could be.
Maybe, you know what? Honestly, I'd say maybe Eric Burns.
Eric Burns, that's another good candidate there.
Yeah.
What would be another good one? Miguel Olivo. I loved that one.
Yeah, just works of art, really.
Absolutely. Art is, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, Cano is, what is the stat that I saw? He has a WRC plus of 411 and a BABIP of 0, which is probably my favorite small sample size fact. The opening series. The guy doesn't have one hit that hasn't left the yard, and every single one, no cheapies. It hasn't been Texas heat.
Oh, no.
That means he's due for some positive regression. That's what that means.
He's going to hit.
Yeah, that BABIP's got to go up.
You would think so.
It's just math, guys.
This is something we're going to watch for the entire first month. I what is it? His third home run last year was in the 71st game. So,
yeah.
Yes, yeah.
June 22nd.
Well, his fourth, he didn't hit his fourth until, he ended the season with 21 home runs and he hit 17 after July 1st, so.
I'm trying, especially, you know, running a blog that prides itself on being analytical. I'm trying to keep control of my emotions here, but man, I am so excited to watch this guy healthy for a full year. I just hope it continues because.
Well, yeah. And you're at that point where, you know, they're coming home to the A's this weekend and, you know, the pitching matchups look good for us, which is a nice thing to be able to say. And you just know that in one of the 3 games, Robbie's leaving the yard. And when that happens, it's going to be mayhem.
Can you imagine if it's the first at bat tomorrow night?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, if it's tomorrow night, I'm going to my first opening day tomorrow night. And if he leaves the yard tomorrow night, I might be going to jail for streaking.
Well, here's to hoping.
What are your thoughts on opening night, Nathan, if you've gone before? You say it's your first one, David. For me, it's always kind of like fun and it's a tradition, but, you know, about halfway through, I'm just like, sometimes I'm very selfishly like, man, I can't wait until I come here and there's not 45,000 people here, which seems crazy because if the Mariners were awesome and they were selling out every time, it would be fantastic and I would love it. But it's like selfishly sometimes I just want like the weak crowds in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, you know, it's not just the crowds though. It's
the 12,000 people.
Yeah, just give me some. Let me get a table in the pen. You know, let me get a high top without
spread
any
out.
Issue.
You know, it's
spread my wings.
I'm inclined to agree. My personal tradition is I go. I have nothing against opening day, obviously, and I know that a lot of people get a lot out of it. It's not just that it's packed for me though. It's not really, and I don't want to sound too snobby. It's not really a baseball crowd. There, it's like going to church on Easter.
It's tradition.
You know?
Yes, absolutely. That's couldn't have said it better.
Yeah, it's you know, people show up and they're excited baseball's back, but it's not really about the game. It's about the meta game. It's about the concept and the idea of baseball. And you know, that's fine. There's no wrong ways to be a fan. I have nothing against that. But if I'm going to be in a packed Safeco and I'm waiting a half an hour for a beer and a half an hour to use the bathroom, I want people in the game. I want engagement. I want an exciting, tense contest. And that's just not what opening day is about. So I'm going on Sunday. To the King's Court. I don't know if I'll sit there, but I'm still so excited. I love Safeco Field. I love that the team has continued to try to make it better over the years. And it's, you know, I haven't seen all of the stadiums, obviously, but the ones that I've seen, Safeco's right up there with the best.
I can't wait. I want to go to so many games this year. And I mean, we went to a lot last year, many of them together,
mm-hmm.
but I've just been missing it season long. Yeah.
I totally agree. Yeah. Did anything else pop out to you guys while we were down in Texas? Like any fun things or any things that you concerned? I thought that the bullpen was, yes, it's not going to be this
totally
good, but this has been our big, like, oh shit, all spring training. And then for two of the guys to be nails are the new guys, Nick Vincent, that we just got in trade from San Diego, and then Mike Montgomery, man. We'll talk to Brendan about that later, but how are you feeling about that?
It was awesome.
You know, it's what I had hoped. You know, I think a couple times I'd said I don't worry about the bullpen because it's, you know, the most flexible part of the roster, and right now, three games. It's what you'd hope. Obviously, I mean, no runs. Obviously, that's what every bullpen hopes. But, you know, it's never looked shaky except for maybe, you know, that first inning by Zick.
Yeah,
but
a few walks here and there. But, yeah.
Sure. It is what it is. And I think what it's doing right now is it's building confidence for Scott Servais when he calls on certain guys because, you know, that right now that's a mixed bag out there of dudes who he's not used to calling on and that none of us are used to enjoying dominating. Yeah. So it's just – it's been a confidence builder. We're riding a huge high right now. I mean, the last two games were incredible.
And, you know, I'm checking on this right now to see why, because it does just feel like it already feels different. I'm trying to figure out why. Even, you know, the Mariners have had decent teams since their glory days, 2007, 2009, and 2014. But I just checked on Baseball Reference while we were talking, and since 2003, the Mariners have had one April above 500, and that was in 2009. One.
Wow.
Jeez.
So, like, even the teams that have been fun and compelling, they haven't gotten off to this start. And that's been one of the big things that I've just – whether it's going to last or not, I just want the fans and the fan base that are so ready, and I totally understand why they're ready to write this team off and same old Mariners. I get where all of that's coming from, but I just want, like, a month. I want them to jump out 16-10 or something like that, like be in first place in mid-May and get people just super excited because – we haven't seen that in so long from this team.
Yep, this is a baseball town. I always say it. This is a baseball town that has lost their faith. They have lost their way.
Oh,
and we show them the path.
Yes, they have.
And they will go to church on more than just Easter.
They will be at that church every single day, passing that coffin. I mean, how could you have lived in if you were. Scott, if you're around my age, David, you're a little bit too young, but you remember the early 2000s. If you were around from 95 to 2003, how could you argue that? This team, this city wants to love the Mariners. It's
Yo, I remember the early 2000s and the late 90s.
You don't remember the late 90s.
Of course I remember the late 90s.
What happened in the late 90s, Dave? What did you do in the late 90s?
What did I do in the late 90s? Some finger paintings. I think I started reading. It was awesome. It was formative.
Just anything, really. Formative years.
I actually do remember going to a game at the Kingdom and distinctly smelling someone smoking a marijuana cigarette.
Whoa.
And, reefers.
Whoa. That's,
that was my first impression of Seattle, which...
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty
cool. It's like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, heck yeah.
I can smell colors.
So, so the schedule coming up, guys... is three against Oakland there because everything's coming up Mariner. They're missing Sonny Gray. I'm looking at the probables for Oakland right now, and Saturday and Sunday are something called TBD, which last I checked was a disease that you had fundraisers for. So I'm not sure. Like, after that, we get the Rangers again, who still don't have Yu Darvish. Like, this team... you know, how cool would it be to see them get off to a 7-3 start? I just want to see that so bad, and
it's there for them.
The times of this show where we're going to do analysis and like actually look at trends, that's coming. But this is just baseball's back, and we can't be more excited.
And we've had three games, so what do you want us to?
And nine home runs.
Analyze?
Nine.
I mean, if you want it to be straight, like we're going to hit three home runs a game, so buckle up.
Straight talk.
Straight talk.
Straight poop from David Skiba.
No, it's honestly, I mean, it's all primed there for them to really get off to a hot start. You know, April isn't the craziest month for them schedule wise. You know, especially getting that nice homestand early against the A's, who look a little forlorn right now. That White Sox series wasn't great for them. But then, you know, next thing is, you know, we go on the road to New York and then Cleveland and hit LA, which, oh, looks ugly right now.
And Cleveland's a brutal trip for this team every year too.
Yeah, Cleveland's never fun. We get an off day.
Can we just not?
I would honestly, if you told me I didn't have to watch it and we could just get swept and just put the three losses on the board, I would be fine. I hate watching them play in Cleveland.
We do have the rare advantage of an off day between the New York travel day, the Sunday, and the Tuesday start to that series.
Yes, we do.
Which is a nice thing, and then for the first time to end the month, we'll get the Astros at home
and then, Royals. Man, that's going to be a fun home stand.
Yeah, that Royals series. If the M's can get off to a hot start, which, I mean, who knows what they're going to do after this, you know, three games, but it looks good.
Uh-huh.
If they can get off to a hot start, that Royals series is going to be cranking. Oh, yeah. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, Astros series for that matter, man. That team's for real. Sure. Like, if the Mariners are going to be what we want them to be, I'm pretty convinced that the Astros are the team that's going to push them the hardest because that team looks tough. Carlos Correa I said it yesterday on a podcast.
It's shocking how good he is.
He looks like 96 A-Rod. That's what it's like watching him.
I really don't want to believe that.
It's annoying, but I have good news.
As long as
the 96 Mariners weren't all that good.
As long as Luis Valbuena doesn't hit another home run this year against us, I'll be cool.
Man, fuck that.
But that was the worst.
That was so bad. I couldn't handle that either.
Worst. I think other than the impossible return, right? That's the all-time worst.
Yes.
When they blew that massive lead.
Yeah.
But, oh my gosh, what was it like? Maybe 2011 or 2010 when they were there and the Mariners had nobody left in the bullpen but Rick White.
Yes, he's been through the wars.
Yep, been through wars. And he came in and Kenny Lofton scored.
I remember that.
Yeah,
you could see it coming. Right? God, the mid-2000s were so bleak, you guys. I know, like, we just went through hell last year, but, like, I don't know how we survived the latter half of the odds.
I can't believe that the Astros, that Minute Maid Park...
That was 2007. That was 2007. Uh-huh. Holy crap.
I can't believe the Astros had the chance to take out the Hill and didn't.
Wait. Are you anti-Hill? I'm cool with the Hill.
I love the Hill.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's weird.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, but it's like the easiest way to get your center fielder's knee messed up.
Yeah, but then you, dude, can remember Lance Berkman made an amazing catch on that hill?
Yeah.
Lance Berkman on the hill.
Noted.
Yeah,
but late. Noted.
Late career Lance Berkman and imagine him roaming around out there.
I think he actually amazing catch.
Ugh. For every amazing catch out there, there's like 10 MCLs that have been left on the grass.
I don't know, man. It's just weird. I'm with Scott on this one. Like, it's not good for players.
That's what I like about baseball, though. I mean, it's the only sport in which you have, like, there are different things in other sports. Like, not all soccer pitches are the same size, but, like, baseball, you can just do whatever you want, more or less, out there and call it good. I mean, remember how deep those Comerica center field park or the fences were at Comerica when it first opened?
Man,
it was like,
pre-1970 whatever Yankee Stadium was bonkers.
Yeah.
They had like a flagpole and like the monuments were in play. So you could just run into those.
God.
It was crazy. Well, I mean, the Polo Grounds was 480 to straight
like
center.
250 yeah, right
like,
down the line.
Yeah, exactly.
I would have loved to have seen a game there, man. That would have been so much fun. It sounded like a real crap hole, but... it sounded like it'd be a lot of fun. We got to wrap up because we're going to bring in Brendan to finally lend some credibility to this gong
show. Which means I'll be departing.
Yeah. We have heard your pleas, listeners, and Scott's going to sit this one out. You guys have any final thoughts to wrap it up before we switch over to Brendan and get down to some nitty gritty?
I'm just personally excited to get Felix at home on Sunday. That's going to be a great moment.
I agree. Yeah. Scott, you said go Ems. Yeah. That's your...
Yep. That's all I'm saying. Go Ems. This time next week, they'll be 6-3,
7-2.
7-2.
Down for that.
Spitting hot fire.
I like
it. That's hot fire.
I like it. I preach it, Brother Weber. All right. We're going to take a break, and we're going to get Brendan back here, and... hang on. I'm also going to get another beer. So we'll be right back.
is the scene you've been seeing all your life. The one inside a dream, you repeat it every night for 24 frames.
Back once again, here we are, and we're going to start a new thing where we're going to try to bring in, we have a huge diverse staff here at Lookout Landing, and we're going to try to be bringing on some people that are willing to join us. And today we have baseball prospectus stalwart, staff writer, my friend, just a generally really good guy, knows a lot about the game. Brendan Golowski is with us. Brendan, how are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, man. We're pretty excited. So let's talk about Mike Montgomery, because a few months ago you were the first one on the site to kind of point out, hey, this guy's a former top prospect who throws from the left side and has no options. Before we cut him to the wind, maybe we should try him in the bullpen. And lo and behold, the team did that, almost certainly because you suggested it. And he looked pretty good in his first appearance. And what was the thought process that you were going through when you kind of promoted that idea?
It's kind of an old idea. I first got it from Rainey Gisarelli of Rainey and the Royals fame. And I forget which obscure 2006 Kansas City Royals reliever he was talking about at the time, but he's like, no rule for baseball, if you have a lefty who's out of options and has not done very well starting, just throw him in the bullpen and see what happens. And obviously one game into this, it's working pretty well with Montgomery so far.
Did you see anything in him that was encouraging to you?
You know, it was more just a general application of a formula. That reliever, sure. You shift somebody from the rotation to the bullpen, they gain on average about 2 miles an hour, and there's a little bit of a band there, so some gain more than others, and that gain will apply to all of his pitches too, and that'll increase the sharpness on his breaking ball, might make his changeup a little bit more deceptive. You don't really know exactly how it's going to work out until you get somebody out there and you see what they can do. Sure.
And obviously one appearance, you know, encouraging, doesn't really tell us anything of with any certainty, but it's definitely really exciting to see. Did you get to see his first appearance? Were you able to watch the game?
I did not, actually. I was at the office.
You were working, as most of us were.
I did work.
But is there anything?
I'm a little more encouraged by the velocity, I think, than just the four strikeouts and two innings.
Yeah, me
and that's
too.
Something that he carried into the spring.
Yeah, what was he hitting, 94, 95, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, 95 was his really top end, but he was sitting 93, 94 easy.
He was not good last year, but he threw back-to-back shutouts, which one against the, and he struck out, I think, 11 Royals, 10 Royals in that game against the Royals.
That was a crazy game.
Yeah, I mean, it was fluky.
A lot of. Incidentally, that was one of the really fun games of the summer, was Mike Montgomery and Dustin Ackley carrying a team for a night.
Oh, my God.
It is insane to look back at the 2015 roster and think about who we had at a certain time.
Yeah. Are you, Brendan, how do you feel about the team right now? Like, I mean, obviously it's hard to be, you know, poo-poo and super down, but pretty encouraging opening series, yeah?
Well, it's not too hard.
Yeah, no, there were a lot of good signs. David. Again, it's just three games. You don't want to get carried away with anything, but it's nice to see that Cano's looking strong, looking healthy, and that his core's rotating without breaking.
Yes, and rotating to hit baseballs very hard. In the opposite direction of which they are orientating. I can't remember if that's the British way of saying
it. Or the opposite of their origination.
Opposite of origination was the word I was going for. Yeah, so we're normally a very academic podcast anyway, but you wanted to do more of an intellectual exercise, and I thought it was a cool idea. You wanted to each of us to bring an over-under to the table and kind of discuss what we're picking for that. I'm going to let you start it off because you're the person that came up with the idea. So what are you thinking?
Okay. I was actually having a conversation with a buddy of mine. This was before for opening day, we got into a bar. We watched the first couple innings of the game.
Sure.
And right before Cano hit his homer, I turned in and was like, 80 and a half homers for Cano, Cruz, and Seager combined over under.
Oh.
And he's like, oh, under. And here we are 3 days later, and we're like 7% of the way to
it. How's he feeling now? Idiot.
What do you guys lean on that? And depending on what you say, what do you think the breakdown might look like?
David.
So this is interesting because one of my over-unders was Cano, specifically home runs. And what I was gonna set you guys at was 25. I will go ahead and say I think Robinson Cano will hit 30 to 32 home runs this season.
Okay.
Which very puts specific. You – yeah, which puts you with 50 between Cruz and Seager, which I think that's – I go over. I think Cruz has 30 to 35 left in the can, and you think Kyle gets 20, personally.
So that would put him – so you're saying Cano at 30 to 32 – so if you go to the lower spectrum of that, if Cruz,
sure.
if Cano had 30, Cruz had 30, Seager had
and
20.
And Kyle had 20, that's exactly 80.
Yeah.
So
you need 80 and a half here, David.
Yeah, exactly. So
I'm taking the over at 80.
I'll take the over. I'll take the over, and I think it's probably going to be 85 to 87.
Okay.
I'm gonna take the over on that, too. And I think it's... I actually think that you've got Cruz pegged. I think that Cruz, you know, this is a guy that's hit, what did he hit last year? 44, and he hit 40 the year before. We're not expecting that. But 30 home runs, you know, that man has immense raw power. He already showed it this year. He hit the ever-living crap out of that ball in Texas.
Yeah.
So it's still there.
Which time?
I think that Cano, projecting 30 home runs for Cano is still kind of a push. There's nothing that we've seen there in this ballpark to make me super comfortable with that, although the way he started, you could definitely see it. But I put him at 27. And then I think Kyle's a better shot of hitting 30 than Cano. I think this is his year.
Wow.
I thought it before the year started, and I still think that. So I'm gonna
That's
put,
right. Yeah, you've been calling that.
I'm going to put Cruz at 30, Seager at 30, and Cano at 27 for an 87 home run total.
B, where are you sitting?
I thought you would have more than David.
I know. Well, I am the optimist on staff.
Here, and we got Cruz hitting 45. We got Seager hitting high 30. Robinson Cano busting 50 by the All-Star break.
So I just marked you down for that. Just so you know.
So you're the over.
Yeah. What are you seeing, man?
I would take the under.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it'll be under by a ton.
Sure.
But I see Kyle as more of a low to mid-20s homer hitter like he always is. So if he takes...
27 last year.
26, wasn't it?
I don't know. I'll check while you keep talking.
Okay.
It's important.
Yeah, please do. So... So you're somewhere in that 20...
Sure, mid-20s.
...range, yeah. I'd put Cano somewhere similar there, too. I know it's very exciting how he's just mashed the ball for 3 days and how he, frankly, mashed it for the last 3 months of last season, too. But yeah. Nathan brought up the ballpark concerns, and I share those as well. And even at his peak, Cano, in probably the most ideal environment for his power swing, was hitting high 20s, low 30s on occasion.
Sure.
And so it seems optimistic to expect more than 25 in a full season.
Yeah.
And I think if come September 28th, we're looking at Robinson Cano and he has 24 home runs, it's probably been a pretty good season.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not to diminish the potential impact that he can have. I mean, he was great 2 years ago when he had 14 home runs.
Sure,
sure. So
hitting 10 more than that, you know, that's not going to be a bad season at all. I just don't see a huge home run total for him.
He needs not to round home runs.
Yeah.
What do you think Nelly's got left?
I'm still expecting something in the 30s. I think there's some cliff potential with him just because he is 35 now.
Uh-huh,
and I don't think that's been acknowledged too widely. And it's not something that I would forecast specifically just because you don't usually see people just completely plummet. But
yeah.
If he were to take a step back and hit 33, it wouldn't shock me.
Of course.
Yeah,
but 33 is still
a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of home runs. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, they're going to hit home runs. I would be very surprised if it was under 70, and that would be somebody got hurt in May.
Yeah, I would agree.
Oof, yikes.
Yeah, you know who that somebody would be. It would, yeah, let's not talk about that.
Well, take it easy.
Take it easy now,
Nathan. You want to do yours or mine?
I'll do mine, and mine's a little mine's a little less sexy because you know.
Did you look up Kyle Seager's home run total by the
way? Yeah, it was just under 26 and a half.
Right.
It's so weird that
we'll
Brendan
call that
knew
one a
that
push.
You didn't.
We'll call that a push. So the first episode that we did of this podcast, if you're listening to this, Brendan was listening to it and just texting Scott and David and I constantly all of the factual errors that we made throughout the podcast.
Wrong.
It was 2003, idiot. So expect our bad knowledge to be called out. Yeah, you know, so what do you think, before I talk about mine, Brennan, you were talking about regression from Cruise. I was going to ask this, and then you hit 33, which is higher than I kind of expected you to hit. But he is 35 this year, but also he's coming off his two most productive seasons of his career. He's had a weird career, hasn't he?
Not unusual for guys that have been popped for steroids either.
To see those effects linger a little bit longer?
Yeah.
So you're saying he's still on the juice?
No, not at all. I'm wondering if there's a secondary effect to taking PEDs.
Well, and Colin O'Keefe, who we lost to the Seattle Mariners, a team we all love.
Yeah, he was big about pushing that.
Yeah. He published an article almost, 2 years ago now, yeah, about something, looking at that aging curve.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's different.
Mm-hmm. So
I mean, look at what Barry Bonds did between 2001 and 2004.
So, yeah, I'm all for Nelly continuing that trend.
Yeah, I mean, if he can do late career Barry Bonds, I think we're okay.
That'd be fine.
That post that he had kind of made me rethink how I look at people that have taken PEDs. I used to not really care, just sort of incentives aligned. Mm-hmm. You get caught, you get punished, move on.
Sure.
But if that's legitimately a changing aging curve, which we haven't really, we can't scientifically say it is, but
of course
that changes the equation a little bit.
Well, and it's like, is it worth, what's first defense now?
80 games, I think.
80?
Brendan?
Yeah, it's 80 games.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it's almost like, is it worth 4 years of late career, you know, magic for 80 games?
One more big contract? Like, Nelly just got, what, $56 million last year? I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah. My over-under is less exciting because Brendan is usually the person at the parties that brings the sexy talk.
That's true.
One of the really exciting things to me about the early series, and I think we mentioned earlier in the podcast, but we haven't talked a lot about on the site, is Chris Iannetta's start. Just his ability to grind out at bats. He's looked good defensively too, although his framing has been less than ideal. But his ability to get on base has been really, really exciting. And I was kind of wondering, like, what do you guys see his? I mean, he had such a horrible year last year. Hit 188, way below his career norms. But before that, he was regularly a guy that was in, you know, the mid to kind of upper threes on his on base percentage. And I'm wondering how many. Well, let's not even talk walks. Let's just put an over-under on his on-base percentage and what you guys think that it would be. Brandon, I'm going to start with you this time.
Oh, so I have to come up with my own over-under?
Hey, you got to give us an aiming point.
That's how this works, isn't it? I'm terrible at gambling, you guys. So okay. Bad. No, I'm going to say over-under on the on-base percentage of 345.
I would take over that.
Where would you?
I'd go over as well.
345. He's a 352 OBP guy career, which includes last season when he had a horrible BABIP and was getting yanked in and out of the lineup, largely because of that horrible BABIP. But he still took his walks. He had over, I think he had over 40 in about 90 games.
41 and 92.
Wow. Okay. And the two seasons before that, he was definitely above 350. I think he was above 350 both times. I want to say he had one over 372.
373 in 2014, to be precise, which is important. So, yeah.
Keep us honest.
Yeah, so you're going to take the over on 345. Would you take the over on 355?
I would have, if I was doing this, I'd have probably set it at 350.
Mm-hmm.
His career is 352.
Yeah. Let's
use the round number.
Yeah. So you've said it, you think he's got about 315 in this year, and that is huge for Mariners.
Yeah. Oh gosh, relative to what we've seen.
Ugh. Mm-hmm. And moving to Safeco Field isn't usually you get a righty in Safeco Field, so we got to go regress significantly.
Sure.
But he's coming from Los Angeles, and that's a pretty tough ballpark to hit. So you don't have to do that quite as much as you might for somebody coming from like Coors.
Yay.
Totally.
And that's
totally
where he made his name was in Coors. But then he kind of held a lot of his great stats when he came over to LA for a few years, and then he just bombed last year. David, 350, over or under?
I would take the over. I really like what I've seen from him. He looks, you know, he just looks more physical than he did last year at any point for the Angels. And I think, you know, you have to give him the benefit of being the full-time guy. And that's not changing unless something really crazy happens in AAA. So, I like the over there. I like him sitting at maybe a 360 clip.
Okay. I'm going to take the under, to be a contrarian. And because, I don't want to throw, you got to weight that earlier, the most recent season, the heaviest, and that was his worst year of his career. He's 33 now. I don't think he's going to be bad. I think he's going to be in the 335 to 340 mark, which still for a, you know, average-ish defensive major league catcher is so much better than what we're used to having that it's not even funny. So I'll take the under and still be super excited about Chris Iannetta.
And that's the thing. Whatever he does is going to look good.
Yes. And and if he's not good, then we'll put in Steve Clevenger. And if he's not good, we'll bring in Rob Brantley. And then if he's not good, we'll cry.
Steve LaRood.
Steve Barron. I got a lot of Steve.
That was my backup over under, with Steve Barron having more or fewer career hits than Steve LaRood,
who has
three.
I'm just now realizing something. This is totally not baseball related at all, but I have young children, and my 8-year-old son is super into Minecraft, and the main character's name is Steve, and that is totally what Steve Barron is. He's totally Steve from Minecraft.
The Minecraft Steve.
Yep. He moves like him. He looks like him. He kind of swings like him.
He's like 7/8 of a Lego.
Just a one-handed, like, kind of like, you know, half downward stroke. That's Steve Barron. That's me.
I do want to kind of give Steve Barron a shout out because he was drafted in 2009. He was their third first rounder that year.
Mm-hmm.
And he bombed his first couple of years in baseball. So bad. Like 30% strikeout rates, 150 average, overwhelmed. Oof. At the plate, on par with pretty much any first rounder that we'd ever seen. And he was a high school guy, but still. And he's gotten better every year he's been in the system. His numbers have improved as he's advanced levels. I was really happy to see him get a shot in the big leagues. I wish he could have got a hit then, because I'm not sure he's ever going to get back up again, especially now that there's
four guys above him.
Steve
LaRood. Yeah. That bastard.
Yeah.
Brendan, did you was he in Everett when you were working there?
Barron?
Yeah.
No. Barron was in Everett, I want to say about around 2010. Okay. I was there in 2013. Pretty so I got DJ, I got Austin Wilson.
Gotcha. Skeebs, David.
Sure.
What is your over-under?
So mine is kind of a fun one. Mine is a number of wins for the Los Angeles Angels. And I want to set it at 76 over-under.
And a half?
Sure. 76. Yeah, 70. Yeah, all right, let's do 75 and a half.
Okay.
All right.
The half's important because we can't have any tight.
Of course. Yeah. There's no pushes.
Yeah. Go first, Nathan.
I haven't gone first yet. Under. So under. Because I hate them and because I have no interest in analyzing it even the littlest bit. I hate that team more than any team in baseball. I hope they lose 110 games and their roster sucks. They have three good players, one half broken, used to be good player, and crap. And the most barren farm system in history. I hate them. Under 63 wins. Screw them. That felt really good.
Wow.
Nathan, how do you feel about Garrett Richards' new changeup?
I like Garrett Richards. He was one of the ones that was the good one. It's him and Mike Trout.
He's a good one.
And Cole Calhoun, and then just that broken, angry show.
Wait, you said Cole Calhoun was good and Albert Pujols was broken, and Albert Pujols hit a 40-burger last year?
You give me the choice of Cole Calhoun or Albert Pujols on this team, I'm taking Cole Calhoun every time. I like Cole Calhoun. He's a good ball player.
That's a fun either-or pick for the... You know, play F war or something.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not for this exact roster since the Mariners' first base position is less than ideal. But you like if I'm picking guys in the playground, like picking a team, I'm taking Cole Calhoun before Albert Pujols. I just think he's a better player at this point. He's a good little ball player, man.
B, what do you think?
What was the number again? 75.
75 and a half.
It's a really compelling over under number.
That's what I know. I thought about this a lot.
I don't really like that team either, and I don't see a lot of playoff potential. But I am buying Richards being better with the changeup this year. And I watched his start against the Cubs, and he didn't really have his command. But he's throwing a 91-mile-an-hour changeup, and it's moving. And he's got velocity separation with his 98-mile-an-hour fastball, and he's got the good slider. I think he's going to have a really big year.
Yeah.
And between that, Trout, Simmons, a couple other good players – I have a hard time seeing them be bad. I have a hard time seeing them make the playoffs too, but something like 78 to 82 feels about okay. right, so I guess I'll take a tentative. Over.
Do you think Richards is on the block maybe come mid-late July?
He'd fetch such a huge package, I would think.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I would say no, just because if you're looking at their long-term strategy, it has to be to win with Trout. Like, you can't wait.
Sure. Especially with that kind of weird contract extension.
You say that, but see, look what they've been doing the last 5 years.
They have completely wasted Trout.
It's awesome.
Yeah. I don't see how you could, like, have that situation, though, and be like, it's time to punt.
Man, I don't know. I've
maybe for 1 year? Yeah.
I've tried to, like, not take as much joy in Schadenfreude as I've gotten older, but I just can't do it. It's just Mike Socha's face, man. I just, every time I see him out of the dugout to argue about some bullcrap thing, I just, they can't lose enough for me. And I love Mike Trout. I lived in LA when they won the World Series in 2002. It was one of the worst sporting experiences of my life. I just want nothing but sadness and misery, just desolation. I'm not excited for them. Brendan, we don't have a lot of time left because we're going to start running along soon, but I want to ask you, do you kind of feel like, I mean, everybody got super pumped about Noah Syndergaard's first start for, you know, good reason. The guy was throwing like a 95 mile an hour slider. Doesn't it kind of feel like maybe Garrett Richards' stuff, like, is that the most underrated stuff in baseball? That guy's filthy.
It might be. Part of that's the changeup.
Uh-huh.
Just because that's such a new pitch. That's a this year addition. And so he was kind of surviving, underselling it because he was better than somebody just hanging on the back of a rotation, but he was making it work with two pitches, and so that's unusual. And so you could look at that and be like, maybe it's not great stuff if you just have better arm strength than everybody and you're blowing people away. The guy in the league that I think has the most underrated stuff, and maybe not anymore because he's gotten blown up a little bit this offseason, but Carlos Carrasco.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Great stuff. Part of the reason I picked the Indians to win the Central this year.
Yep.
I think they're a really underrated team. They scare the poop out of me.
B, is there a guy in the Mariners org down in the minors who you think isn't? Is there one who you can point to who you don't think has gotten the shine they deserve? Who you think might be having poised for a year where we all go, oh wow, this guy might climb the ladder.
I don't see anybody in the system that has a super high ceiling.
Yeah,
is more the problem at this point. So if you're looking for a first division regular, there's only really a handful of guys that I think could conceivably reach that, which is a problem for a farm system.
Sure.
And one of them is a 20-year-old who just got held back in extended spring training.
Go on.
That tells you a lot of what you need to hear.
But that's kind of it.
But that guy, he was a low draft pick. They weren't expecting that much out of him.
Yeah. They didn't waste a high draft pick on him.
I will say, a lot of people are low on Tyler O'Neill, and I kind of am too at the moment until he can prove that he can adjust to something that has any spin on it. But he's one of those workout warrior, really dedicated, hard worker types who could conceivably put in the time to improve at a skill that most people wouldn't. And he is very young for his level. I expect him to struggle, at least for a while, in his first taste of AA. But that's a guy who has the physical tools to be a very good player. And if you're looking at a potential breakout, a potential starter where you might not expect one, he seems like the easy candidate to point at.
All right, I'm going to ask you two questions, and then we're going to start to wrap up. Actually, it's one question, but I want two different answers for it. I want, on the pitching side and on the position player side of the Mariners farm system, I want the best individual tool.
There's a bunch of guys in the system that can run.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
Arabia's legs.
Yeah, can we avoid speed? Because I don't think that one's as compelling.
Okay, sure.
No, okay. Yes, we can.
We can avoid speed. Okay.
But it would be Arabia.
Yeah, no, he's an 80.
Yeah.
He can run.
Let's talk and that is fun tools.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit internally about
how about your favorite tool?
Okay, that's interesting. For pitchers,
sure.
There was a reliever last year at Everett named Joe Pistorisi,
okay,
who just busted out a 60 curveball.
Okay.
And that was fun. And then he got popped for PEDs like 2 days later.
And we're looking for optimistic things that we can get excited about here.
We're trying to build hope.
Yeah. He had 46 strikeouts and 42 innings out of the bullpen for that. And he's a Wazoo Cougar. He was taken in the 17th round last year.
That's fun.
And he was sitting low to mid 90s that night with a plus curveball. I was like, this guy could move really fast.
Okay. But you can't move fast when you're suspended due to...
You can't move fast when you're suspended.
Yeah.
But I'm optimistic about him when he comes back.
Was that in the minors, is it a 100-game suspension when you get popped, or is it 80 like the major leagues?
That's a good question.
I think it might be 100, but it's not super important. But sure. So he's just starting to serve that this year, so we won't see him till the end of this year. Is that correct?
He started serving it last August, I believe.
Okay, so we'll see him about midseason.
We'll see him midseason. Yeah, he could get to Bakersfield. Actually, I wouldn't be shocked if they fast tracked
the dream.
Yeah,
the dream of all baseball players.
That's the mascot, right? The Bakersfield Dream.
Should be. He's a lefty and
ooh. Okay.
Wow.
We'll keep. What, how do you spell his last name? Do you know?
PISTORESE.
Okay. Cool.
So that's a deep fun one.
I like it. Okay. That is a deep cut. That's like a seaside.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. What about on the position player side?
On the position player side, if we're talking current tool,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was really surprised with how good of an arm Drew Jackson had.
Yes, yeah. That's really exciting. We, Ethan Novak, one of our newer writers, just wrote about
loves
him too.
Drew Jackson.
Yeah, that. But you view him as like if he's going to make the bigs, it's on his glove and his arm, right?
Yeah, it's a glove first profile, but he's a plus runner.
Wow,
70 arm.
Dang,
good range to both sides. Made some errors last season, and so that got a bit of attention. Not real worried about it long term. That seems like the kind of thing that you could iron out with repetitions. Maybe not. It's something to monitor going forward. But it was also an unseasonably hot summer in the Northwest last year. A lot of infields in that league, a little rougher than normal. Everett had brown grass.
Wow.
Which is the first time I can recall seeing that in a professional field. But at some point, you just get a bunch of 100-degree days in a row, and it's I don't really know what you can do about it.
Yeah. Not here. We're not used to that, so we're not ready for it.
No.
So Drew Jackson's arm. I'm excited about it. What about how close, just because I love the power. I am the man whose single favorite tool in the major leagues is Giancarlo Stanton's power. So how close was Tyler O'Neill's power to making that? Because that's like my thing.
That's his thing.
Raw power, probably about a 70.
Okay.
Wow.
So it's there.
Yeah. I mean, he can drop booms.
Cool. All right. Well, we're going to check back in with you later this year because even if the team is getting exciting, I think we're kind of all on the same page that long term, what's going to define Jerry DePoto's regime is him and Andy McKay's ability to draft and develop and make a cohesive and working top half of the major leagues farm system. Because right now it is not that. Would that be accurate to state?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let me ask you. I'm going to end with this question because hopefully the answer will make me happy. Gap between the 20th best farm system and the Mariners, and the Mariners and the Angels, which is larger? Just say the Angels. Just do it. Just make me happy. Come on.
The Angels. It's the Angels.
Yeah. Screw them.
Well, the Angel system is weird because if you look at it, and even if you take like a top 75th percentile outcome for some of their top guys, assuming it all works out, you're getting a back end starter, a fringe starting catcher, and maybe one of their athletes takes a step forward and grabs a bench role.
That's the entire system.
Pretty much.
That is, see, you know, that's good stuff.
It could be worse.
You have made me very happy. Brendan, dude, I am so glad you came on with us, man. Thank you so much for your knowledge.
Thanks for having me.
It was so much fun. I can't wait. Are you going to go to any of the games this weekend?
Yeah, I'm probably going to the opener, and I'm doing Tacoma on Saturday at least, maybe Sunday.
Cool.
There we go. Yeah,
well, if you can make Sunday, I will definitely want to see you. And
I think we'll see you Sunday.
Grab a beer in the pen and hang out and watch Felix. So awesome having you, man. Thank you so much.
Sounds great. See you guys.
All right. Thanks, take care, buddy. Man. Didn't know it was Devil Town. Oh, Lord, it really brings me down about the Devil Town. All my friends were vampires.
didn't know they were vampires. Turns out I was a vampire myself in the Devil Town.